lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I am here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
I'm doing all right. How are you today?
Pretty good.
We might actually get that cold snap that we didn't get last week.
You think so?
I hope so.
It's beautiful.
They're still predicting it.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as I know, when I looked yesterday, I think, and they said that it was actually going to get into the upper 40s this week.
Really?
At night.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
Well, it's beautiful out there today.
It is. It's a nice day.
A lot of yard work calling me that I probably should be doing.
Yeah, well, it should be nice for a while. It's not supposed to rain again until sometime next week.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Get some stuff done. This is a good time of year for me to get stuff like that done because I've got two big buildings behind my house. Mm-hmm. And like now's the time to get out there and like do the spring cleaning.
Yeah.
Because once that warm weather really sets in, there ain't no going out
there
and cleaning.
Then there's spiders.
Well, there's spiders and wasps, but the bigger thing is just the heat, trying to work out in those buildings.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Well, one of them, like, The shed thing opens up all over the place. It seems like you could get some good airflow through that.
They both open up pretty good, but they get so
Well, but
so
the other one
high.
Only opens on one side unless you added something.
No. I haven't added anything, but there's two windows, too.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do it. Well, that one has a metal roof.
Right.
And that metal roof, dude, it is like a scorcher, man.
Yeah.
I'd actually talked about when we were hanging
Selling
out
it
there.
A sauna space?
You could. Yeah. When we were hanging out there a lot, putting a sprinkler on top of it just to try to cool down that.
Yeah.
Because if you cool down the roof, the rest of the occupying space would be fine.
Yeah, I miss the whiskey and foosball days, actually.
Yeah, I still got the foosball table, man.
Is it still in good shape, or is it all warped and
it's
stuff?
It's been so long since I played on that, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. So, I still got a foosball table, too. It's sitting in my garage. It's become like a workbench,
which
is really
sad. Dude, I love
playing
some foosball, man. I'm all about it.
I kind of miss that game.
Yeah.
That was my college game.
Yeah. A
lot of foosball.
It's fun.
And high school, actually. You know, okay, so foosball started with me. I went to a boarding school my junior and senior year.
Yeah.
And they had a recreation area like any college would. And it had the same games that any college recreation area would, which was ping pong, foosball, and pool.
Nice.
Right. So I played a little bit of pool, and I played a whole lot of ping pong.
Yeah.
Because I'd been playing ping pong for a couple of years because I'd worked as a lifeguard here. And as part of the Swim and Racket Club, and the Swim and Racket Club had a ping pong table downstairs.
Yeah.
And so when it rained in the afternoon in the summer here, which is like
a
every
lot.
Day,
yeah.
We'd go play ping pong.
Yeah.
And so I played a lot of ping pong before I went up there. And so that was really my game. My buddy Jim and I would play ping pong, and I would beat him. And then he would drag me over to the foosball table and,
and
whoop
would...
me. Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Whoop
so he whooped you in both then?
No, I'd beat him in ping pong.
Oh, you beat him in ping pong. Okay.
Yeah,
my bad.
And so finally one day I was like, look, Jim, like I understand why you want to bring me over here to the foosball table after I beat you in ping pong so that you can beat me. But the difference here is that you know how to play ping pong, and I don't know how to play foosball. So if we're going to keep doing this, you're going to have to teach me to play foosball.
All right. Show me some moves, right?
Yeah. So he did. And then when I went up to college, I dominated the house foosball table.
Yeah.
Because Jim was really good. And then I went and visited. So the crazy part, though, is I went. Jim went to Greensboro for college.
Yeah.
And so I went and visited him and another friend of mine from high school that had also gone there. I went and visited him one weekend my freshman year. And I'm fresh off of just, like, playing a lot of foosball and just killing it.
Yeah.
You know, and I go up there, and I was definitely better than I had been in high school.
Yeah.
And I got up there, and they had a foosball table in his dorm. Not in the room, but in the
common area.
Yeah, of the dorm. And so we went and played some foosball, and he'd gotten a whole lot better, too.
He had gotten better, too. Yep.
Yeah.
That's how that usually
whole
works.
A whole lot better.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, he beat me worse than in high school.
That's one of those games that you really only are getting better unless you're playing people better than you.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of games like that, but that's definitely one. You don't really improve unless you've got a good competition.
There's some truth to that. I mean, you certainly improve faster when you're playing with people better than you, because you're learning moves that they do too. Right?
Exactly. Like,
but we're starting off with a long discussion of foosball. This is funny. But it is a game that you can get better at playing by yourself. Even
you think so?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just like practicing your
learning movements. To manipulate the ball.
Yeah. You know. Passing it around just to yourself. Like, you know, you set the defense down in a particular way and you try to maneuver around it.
I can see that. But I've definitely. Because
a lot of the shots, especially on the offensive end, are muscle memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's something to that for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's because
the more you do it, the faster you get, and the faster you get, the less likely the other person is going to be able to react in time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I miss playing that. We gotta do it sometime.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
We both have tables. So
yeah. Forget this podcast. Let's just stop now. We'll go play foosball the rest of the evening.
Hey, don't tempt me with a good time.
All right. So let's get into it.
All right. What you got?
We got a few things. There's. Maybe we should start with the Moscow concert attacks, because that's the oldest thing here, and we just didn't discuss it last time.
Yeah.
I don't even have a whole lot to say about it, because there's still not a lot of certainty about who's responsible.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
I think that there's good evidence that there was at least coordination with Ukraine.
Yeah.
ISIS-K, there is some accusation that there's, just because they shifted their targets over the years from U.S., Israel, Western powers in the Middle East to China, Russia, Iran, there has been some accusations that ISIS-K works with the CIA.
Yeah,
And
I'm sure it's all just a coincidence.
And there's like a historical relation that it may have originated with the CIA, because this is in Afghanistan, part of ISIS. So you remember the CIA was supporting Afghan Mujahideen against the Russians in the 80s, and so that doesn't necessarily mean that they're still working with them now, but. Like a lot of these guys,
there's a history there.
There's definitely documented evidence that people that are at the top of the, I guess the organization were CIA trained.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. So it could, who knows? It's hard to say. The thing that I mostly want to point out about it is that if the Ukraine government directed it, or if the CIA obviously directed it,
right.
That means that your tax dollars as a U.S. citizen were used towards a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Targeting civilians in Russia.
Yeah. Unacceptable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and while we're on that point, I guess, probably a more, ostentatious version of that is Israel over the last week.
Yeah.
There was a bombing of the Iranian embassy in Syria, which embassies have historically been kind of sacrosanct.
Yeah.
Like you don't target embassies.
Well, and a big reason for that is it's really no different, legally speaking, at least as I understand it, to attack an embassy versus attacking like their
country. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was always my understanding, was both of those are pretty well interchangeable.
Yes. Israel attacking the Iranian embassy is tantamount to Israel attacking Iran.
Yeah. So
directly. Yeah. They say that they killed an IRGC general. That's the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Yeah.
Which is like their special forces kind of. Yeah. And several other IRGC members, as well as embassy staff and so on. But the main point is that, like, I can't remember the specifics now, but there was a conflict during which people in the the national embassy, the country's embassy. I can't remember what country. It might have been Iran, actually, but whatever. It doesn't matter. In England, we're using the embassy as a base to fire on, like, British police and so forth.
Oh, wow.
And the British didn't attack the embassy.
Yeah.
Because embassies are sacrosanct.
Yeah. It's like this, just not something
this
you
is
do.
An important part of how the modern world works, because it is the center of diplomacy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea, at least. I mean, that's where Assange huddled up.
Yeah. Well, but then the British did go into that embassy in the end. Although I guess they were invited in by the Ecuador.
I was going to say, didn't Ecuador? I thought that they had struck a deal with Ecuador to release to get him out.
So. In the end, that's what happened.
Yeah. So it's not like they just knocked down the door and went in,
right? Although I think that if Ecuador was to do it right, they should have gotten their own security staff to like carry him out, essentially.
Yeah.
It would have been a bad look for Ecuador, though. Maybe.
Yeah, probably.
This way, you can kind of blame the UK.
Yeah.
But beyond the attacking the Iranian embassy, they also bombed a food aid convoy, killing three Brits and an American.
Yeah.
It was clearly marked. They knew exactly what they were doing. Well, the story is that they followed them for an hour and a half.
They did. So I was going to say, the reporting I had seen was that they were in contact with what's the Israeli Defense Force, the IDF?
That's it, the Israeli Defense Force.
Okay, yeah. They were in contact with them like the entire day. Mm-hmm. Like that they were telling them where they were going and what they were doing, and that this just kind of happened out of nowhere.
Yeah, the convoy was approved, the route was approved, it was all known in advance. After the first missile hit, they contacted the IDF, said, "You're firing on us, this is what we are," and then they fired two more missiles.
Wow. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, they destroyed every vehicle in the convoy, and they did it in a very measured way. In not in the sense of, like, this was very moderate of them.
No, yeah, like...
But I mean, it was clearly intentional.
They went out to destroy, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they hit the first truck, people transferred to the other two trucks, they hit a second truck, people transferred to the last truck, and they hit the third truck.
Yeah, just boom, boom,
boom. They did it in such a way to kill everybody in that convoy.
Yeah.
And the insane thing, of course, to me, is once again, an innocent American was killed.
Yeah.
That was just there trying to deliver food aid in Gaza.
Yeah.
And our executive branch said, well, Israel didn't really do anything wrong.
Seriously, that's mm-hmm. insane.
Yeah, they were like, well, they didn't, you know, break any international laws or anything.
Yeah.
So wow. We're okay with this?
So we're just, that's just condoning it then.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing I just wanted to say was this same group, which I can't remember the name of the group, but they have been doing aid for both sides. Mm-hmm. They have been giving aid to the Israelis and the Palestinians. Yeah. So it's not like that this was like a one-sided group that you could make some kind of argument that they were doing something they shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
Like they were 100% legit, like, mm-hmm. and everybody knew that.
Yeah. The claim from Israel is that they had an armed terrorist with them. But he wasn't there.
Yeah. Coincidentally.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, who knows? There's certainly reason that aid workers might hire on an armed guard at this point.
Well, yeah. Can you blame them?
But there wasn't an armed guard with them
at
the time of this.
Yeah.
And I'm just flabbergasted by our government not doing more to hold Israel accountable for killing an innocent American citizen that was just trying to deliver aid.
Yeah.
And if you don't think that the U.S. was somehow involved through Ukraine or whatever in the Moscow concert attack, and so you're not concerned about your tax money being used towards terrorism there, your tax money was absolutely used to kill an American citizen in Israel.
Guess who paid for them bombs?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there ain't no question about that.
So, I just don't know what to think of this. No. And I'm still really troubled by the fact that there isn't a single legitimate, I guess you would say, or serious presidential candidate that is opposed to this war.
Yeah. No, there's not.
The best we've gotten actually is Donald Trump saying, we'll just finish it quick.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
which is not great. But you're right. Like, that is the best we've got. Like I say,
yeah.
None of the other ones, I mean, RFK, Bush, I mean, not Bush. Oh, shit.
Biden.
I'm Biden. Yeah. Really going back. But yeah, no, it's crazy, man.
Well, and still the administration is planning leaks saying that Biden's really upset with Netanyahu and so forth. But the truth is that our government's not doing anything about this.
No, there's no. I mean, especially Biden. Like, the Biden administration is like, I mean, they're hung because they're part of their base is against this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only reason that they're even pretending to have any kind of wishy-washy about it.
Yeah. Imagine if RFKJ came out opposed to this war.
Well, if he had felt the
same
way
about the Ukraine war, against the Israel Gaza war, and
you're talking about
vaccine mandates and lockdowns.
Well, basically, if he had all, I mean, he has all those positions but one. Like the Israeli war is the only position that he's really bad on, but he's so bad on it that you can't. It's unforgivable.
Like, yeah. Well, and it doesn't create a real alternative.
Exactly.
That's kind of the problem. Like the, I suppose it was always true. I feel like there are enough conservatives that would be turned by the Israel-Palestine thing. That he could pull enough votes away from Trump with the vaccine stuff.
Yeah.
That if he was on the right side of Israel-Palestine, that he could definitely pull enough votes away from the Biden camp to be a real contender.
I think he could. I mean, if he held those positions. But, I mean, he just, one position is basically, as far as I can see,
has submarined his campaign.
Has submarined this campaign, yeah.
Oh, well. Well, he also picked up the money woman as his VP candidate.
I can't remember her name, but the
Shanahan, something Shanahan.
Yeah.
Shanahan.
I haven't looked into it, but apparently she has some strange religious views too.
Oh yeah. She's like a druid or something.
Druid. That's what it is. Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of it, so I know nothing about druids. Like, I don't know anything about this.
Well, nobody else does either. It's a religion that had to be reinvented, like witchcraft.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not something that, that has, I mean, I guess it probably has had some kind of like semi-continuous existence over the millennia.
Yeah.
But the truth is that like modern druidism is probably mostly made up.
Yeah.
I mean, not
like all religions, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I don't mean to make it sound like that is just, it's just like a complete fiction in terms of what they decided the beliefs and practices were. There's like some evidence of what, you know, what remains, but like witchcraft, it was like reconstructed from ancient stuff and not something that was a continuous practice that people that was passed down
that has been passed from group to group to group.
Right.
Yeah. I gotcha.
So,
well, but anyway, the point I was going to make with that is like that completely, like the idea that he's going to pull Trump voters now is pretty well gone. The amount of Trump support that he's going to pull with that VP pick, like he's completely flipped that switch. Like he'll just be pulling from Biden now.
Yeah, which makes me.
Makes you want to put the conspiratorial hat on?
Yeah, it does a little bit. Or actually, it's more like it makes me want to take the conspiratorial hat off.
Oh, really?
Because I really thought that he was more likely to pull more Trump voters than Biden voters.
Well, he was. Up until that VP pick, I think that was true.
Yeah.
But the Trump supporters will not vote for somebody with those type of religious views.
Probably not.
It's just not going to happen.
And I suspect that it was a choice of economic convenience.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's got a lot of money.
He's got to get on the ballot. And that's going to take a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right about that. I think that's ultimately what drew his decision.
It's unfortunate. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Maybe 2028 he'll get his act together.
We'll see. I don't know, because I like the guy, but
because in 2028 he'll be running against Biden again because Trump will have already served his second term. I mean, assuming that he gives up office at the end of it.
Oh, you think he's going to give up power?
Of course. Like, right? How could you not believe that? Because of what happened his first term.
Exactly.
When he didn't give up power.
Yeah, when he literally just like went out the back door.
Yeah. Biden will only be 87 or...
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah,
they're
definitely not rolling him back out again.
You know, so they'll get RFKJ versus Biden and DeSantis.
Yeah,
maybe or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows, man?
Okay, before I start getting emails on that, like a lot of that was facetious. I don't expect Biden to run again. I think DeSantis.
I still question whether he's going to run this time.
Yeah. I don't think DeSantis will get a 2028 nod from the Republican Party. I think he screwed up this year too badly. And
yeah. I mean, he just showed he doesn't have the, at least on the national stage.
He doesn't have the charisma.
No, he just doesn't.
Yeah. So. Oh, well. In a lot of ways, I think that he's good. I think he's terrible in the thing that's most important for a president. So I'm not upset about that,
yeah.
Really. But
he's a great governor, though.
Yeah, and he should stay there.
Yeah, 100%.
Good for Florida.
Yep.
Although, he did just sign a social media ban for under 14.
Yep.
In the state of Florida.
Yep.
In a sense, I'm conflicted on this because I think that social media in young kids is damaging. Like we talked, it was about a year ago that we did almost a whole podcast on operant conditioning in the context of social media and how addictive and damaging it can be. And there's certainly plenty of correlation between bad psychological issues. You got a friend over there.
Hey there, buddy.
He's
looking up like, where's your wife at?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's saying. He's looking for. Yeah. Where's my friend? Yeah. You're right. There's certainly a correlation between some bad psychological issues, increased depression, increased suicidality, increased anxiety, and social media in young kids.
Yeah.
And you can see where it would come from. There's, of course, all the cyberbullying, which I think is just kind of, I mean, I don't mean to scoff at it totally because I know that it can be serious.
Because kids are susceptible to it.
Yeah.
But what irritates me with the bullying thing, and I just want to say this, is there was a time where we used to use this phrase, you may remember it, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Well, but then it became words hurt, and then it became silence is violence. So.
Yes. Like, and that's literally where we're at in this country. Yeah. Like, and it... Like I say, it's just, oh, that one irritates me. Like I say, and I'm not trying to downplay because I know like the serious effects of cyberbullying. I'm not trying to like dismiss that.
Yeah.
But I think we can condition our kids a little better to deal with it.
Exactly.
Like that's my argument.
Well, and that's what I would actually say about social media generally.
Yeah.
But the important point is this, that while I think that it's probably good to keep kids, especially young kids, away from social media for as long as you can.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the state's responsibility.
I agree.
I'm opposed to the nanny state.
Me too.
And well, I think that parents should be able to make their own choices. Guy.
Like I'm big on, I believe in freedom. I don't believe the state is the person that gets to make those type of decisions for anybody.
Yeah.
And the social media thing, I do think it's good to keep your kids off of as much as you can. I do think they need a fair amount. I think they need some because, I mean, I just to kind of keep up with the other kids and to be part of the, I mean, you need some of that. You don't need a lot, though, is what I would say. And I've got two kids, so believe me, like I'm in the thick of this right now.
Yeah.
So, like I say, don't.
Well, when did your youngest get on TikTok?
It's been a year or two, a couple of years maybe. So I couldn't tell you exactly.
So like 12?
Probably. Maybe something like that. Which, like I say, I'm not saying that's great. Like it's not. But like I do believe, man.
Yeah, to be right. I remember when she would come to dinner with us, and she would sit there like,
yeah,
dancing in her seat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the thing. So particularly with TikTok has kind of evolved, because like when my kids were first on TikTok, it was all dance videos. Like that's all. Like they weren't consuming any real type of like information off of there. It was all dance videos. And that's not really what TikTok is anymore.
Yeah.
Like TikTok is like information and media. Like it's basically a form of media.
Well, there's plenty of people that would swear to me that if your girl was Chinese, that she would have been getting educational videos back then instead of dance videos. Wow.
I mean, I think so I'm not on TikTok. I've used TikTok. It's not like I'm illiterate with it, but my gauge of TikTok is
I've seen half a dozen videos or so.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a little more than that, but, but TikTok's going to give you what you want. Like that's been my take on how that platform operates.
Yeah.
Like, which works. Like it works as far as drawing you in, because whatever you're into, you're going to get a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it seems to figure out pretty quick what you're into.
Mm-hmm. That's the people around me who have made that suggestion about how China's using it to dumb down America or whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't it possible that America was already dumb?
Yes. I think you may have nailed it.
It's like, isn't it possible that maybe Chinese kids are looking for different things than American kids are?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I actually think that that's more likely. Cause even Chinese kids in America are probably seeing more educational stuff right. than American kids in America.
No, I believe that.
Just because of the, you know, cultural values.
Yeah. I mean, we're just different in that way.
So, so I do have a problem with the state stepping in to the role of the parent and deciding for families what kids should be permitted. And I know we were talking the other night about drinking. Kids and drinking.
Oh, kids and drinking. Yeah.
And
I was like, man, we talk about drinking all the time.
I understand that the laws are out there about this, but I should be able to give my kid wine or whatever at dinner.
Yeah.
If I choose to.
Yeah. Under your supervision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not buy them a bottle of whiskey and send them out in the woods or whatever.
Yeah, like, right.
That's bad parenting.
Yes.
All the same. Actually, I should probably be permitted to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you per se.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I do. Like there's definitely a difference between, like you're saying, bad parenting and like giving your kid a glass of wine with dinner or something.
Yeah.
But
just because there are bad parents out there doesn't mean that the government gets to take on that role.
It's a fine line. I'll say that.
It shouldn't be government. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be somebody that steps in, but it shouldn't be government. It should be community, church, whatever.
Yeah.
The problem is that we don't have any real community anymore.
Yeah. Well, like, and that's
the government is my neighbors.
Yeah.
But I don't really know my neighbors. I've met my neighbors.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that's
and not all of them, actually.
I mean, I'm the same way. I barely know my neighbors, but it is strange because, and I bet you can attest to this too. Like, I've lived in a handful of places with my parents growing up. We didn't move a lot, but we moved like 3 times.
Yeah.
Everywhere we moved, my parents knew and were very close with the neighbors.
Yeah.
Like I think that may be a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I say, I mean, that was absolutely.
It's that damn social media. It's isolated us physically.
Maybe. But you're not on social media. So what's your excuse, Mike?
That's why I'm not I'm a self-isolationist.
You're self-isolationist. Well, in the past though, have you been more social with your neighbors in other places you've lived?
Well, yes and no. When I was living in Atlanta, it was apartments, duplexes, so forth. So
yeah,
when I was in those situations,
kind of force it.
Yeah. Because when I was in those situations, I knew the people around me.
Like I absolutely, when we lived in the apartment, like I knew everybody that lived in my building.
Yeah. And when I was in the duplex, I like hung out and was friends with the people on the other side of the duplex.
Yeah. once again, you're kind of forced into that. I mean, you didn't have to be that close with them, but like,
I mean, you could avoid it. Yeah, like, you don't have to. You don't have to know them, but they were cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was my experience in the apartment. Like I said, the guy that lived above me.
One of them was a musician. I'd like go over there and play guitar. Like,
yeah. I don't know. There's definitely something to that, though.
Yeah.
But the community is. It's not. The government is the community now. Like in the scenario you're laying out, where like another group would step in and be like, "No, you can't do this."
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you honestly, this residential area that I live in, there's been a lot of push over the last couple of years that I've seen to create more of a community within this giant residential. I think this is the biggest residential area in Alabama still, isn't it?
It was at one point.
Yeah. And in fact, you may have seen when you were driving in here today, there was a sign up, garden club. But everybody was invited to something today, I think, at the 19th hole.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see. I'm paying attention.
I've gotten emails about this, online group that organizes physical
meetups
and things like that for this community, for the residential area.
Yeah.
So
stuff like that's cool.
Yeah. I should get involved. I have to sign up online.
Yeah. But y'all have a pretty strict HOA in here too, though.
Yeah, we do.
Not a big fan of HOA.
See, but here's the funny thing is that this community, such as it is, isn't really a big fan of the HOA either.
Yeah, well, maybe it's time to bring down the HOA.
Yeah.
Sounds like somebody needs to run on a campaign of, like, bring down the HOA.
Oh, they are.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah.
You need to go vote.
Every time elections come around, I get flooded with, these people are all crooks. Let's replace them all. You know, it's just like
that's different from destroying the whole thing, though.
Yeah, it's just like any other government body, I guess.
Exactly. That's the whole point. It's the whole problem.
So, I guess we were talking about like, okay, if you want to give your kid wine at dinner, you should be able to do that. Yeah. And you said to me,
I don't know what did I say.
You said, kid.
Oh, no, yeah, you're talking. Well, no, that's exactly what I said. Yeah, because you know that kid's going to go run to school and tell every other kid, and then you're going to have DHR beating down your door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what will happen. Like, depending on your kid. Like, I'm
statute
sure.
Statute of limitations is far long since passed, and I'm a grown up now. So, but my parents gave me half shots of this coffee liqueur.
Yeah.
When I was really young.
Yeah.
And I would just like dip my finger in it and I thought it was tasty.
Yeah.
It was Tia Maria, actually. It's Puerto Rican liqueur. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as a kid, my dad would always, when I asked or whenever, mm-hmm. but periodically would let me take a sip of his beer.
Yeah. Beer was a punishment in my house.
But I hated it.
Yeah. Like, that's exactly. Beer was a punishment in my house. It was like, well, you can either finish your vegetables or take a sip of my beer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll eat the vegetables.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I was the same way. Still kind of am.
I still don't drink beer. Yeah. Maybe because of that. Maybe that was good parenting.
Maybe it was good parenting.
Make you just averse to beer generally. Yeah. But there's certainly been a lot of evidence that if you are brought up with alcohol, then you learn how to use it responsibly. You know its effects on you. Whereas there's a lot more problems with the kids that go to college and are finally able to access alcohol that have never been able to before.
Yeah. The same's true with drugs and whatnot too.
Yeah.
I ran with a pretty rowdy crew in high school and none of us have had the type of issues that I've seen from people who didn't run with that type of crew.
Yeah.
Like once they got out of their parents' house and were out on their own, it was like, man, like just going to do whatever and do anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And just not being able to handle that as an adult.
Yeah. You learn to respect the things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's good to get that experience at a young age. Mm-hmm. Like I say, like a teenager is kind of the age to kind of dabble with that type of thing. You don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but
I mean, your brain's still forming though. Like I don't know. There's questions about that, but I think more than anything, especially if you're talking about, parents serving alcohol to their kids at dinner and stuff like that. You've taken away the forbidden fruit part of it.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the draw to kids that have never had access.
Oh,
is this like forbidden fruit thing. And so they go overboard.
Yeah.
But the point I want to get around to though here is that it's still not the place of the government. Bad parenting does not excuse the government to step into the home.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And if we had, better communities, so we may not have communities with our neighbors, but still a lot of people have communities with various organizations that they're involved with.
Yeah.
Church, Rotary clubs, whatever.
Yeah.
Where people see.
Those aren't the only communities though, Mike. Like there's drug communities and sure. bar communities.
Sure.
And like all of those are, and we really live in an age where you get to choose your community. So yeah, the stuff you listed off, those are more the mainstream legitimate communities, but like there's also the more seedy communities. And we live in a time where you kind of get to choose where you want to go.
Yeah, I'm hoping to look up real quick.
What kind of community are you looking for?
Well, I was looking for a quote, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think that it's...
That it fits?
Yeah, here we are. So Robert Heinlein. This is actually a quote that I have paraphrased for a long time. Now I have the actual quote in front of me, so it'll be easier.
Yeah.
It is a truism that almost any sect, cult, or religion will legislate its creed into law if it acquires the political power to do so. No. And so I just have a problem with legislation of morality.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Because not everybody agrees.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
On what appropriate morality is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some basics that we can all agree on. But yeah. Whether you serve your kids alcohol when they're young isn't part of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't steal, don't murder, those kind of things are pretty standard everywhere.
I think the Ten Commandments is pretty solid, actually.
Well, but there's a whole lot in there even that, I mean, the first four commandments are about God. They aren't even about how you interact with people. It's, no graven images, no God before me.
Well, all of those are good too, but...
Well, but not everybody agrees on who that God is.
Well, you better get in line, is all I can tell you.
Honor your father and your mother are a good thing, but are you going to put somebody in jail for not?
Maybe. No, I'm picking that. Yeah. Obviously, I'm being facetious.
And I have a real issue with adultery.
Yeah.
But are you going to put somebody in jail for that?
There's been times where they have. Maybe. I don't know. There's definitely been
I don't think in this country.
Not in this country. Yeah.
You're more likely to get put in jail for relations with somebody of a different race in this country than for adultery.
Yeah.
Which is also ridiculous. But I understand the purpose of these things, particularly adultery. I mean, I studied anthropology. Now, I did physical anthropology primarily, but I did plenty of cultural stuff while I was going after my degree, because there are only so many physical anthropology courses you can take.
Yeah.
You have to get so many credits in anthropology. But, there's nothing more disruptive to a small-scale foraging culture than adultery.
Yeah. Like, I believe
because
it.
Everybody is kind of interdependent, and there it just creates a social rift that is hard to mend.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why there are really serious consequences for adultery in small-scale cultures. I mean, adultery is punishable by death in a lot of small-scale cultures. Like, you really want to avoid this because this can mean the difference between several people starving or not.
Yeah.
Just this conflict that it creates within
the group.
Within your group, yeah.
Yeah.
So I understand it, but I don't approve of that as a... as a cultural moray, okay, that's one thing. As a legislated law, it's something different.
No, I agree. For the most part.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so I'm not real thrilled about DeSantis. It just seems to me that his idea, he's not really a free society governor.
No.
Like, there were some things that he was really good on. Of course, my problem at the national level is that he's a big believer in the security state. And this is actually an example of that, I suppose.
It is.
That he thinks that the government has the right, because they think they know what's best for your kids, to step into the home and make that decision for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like 100%, he's not a libertarian. He's definitely a believer in, and he's, I'm trying to think of other examples, but there's quite a few where he's legislated stuff where it's like, we're going to use the government to force you to do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, because we think that's what's best.
Because we think that's what's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I'm definitely can't support that.
Yeah. Well, so let's hit the Dollar Tree thing, and then if we have time, we'll talk about Apple, and if not, then we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
I did get in a big argument with somebody at my office this week about antitrust legislation.
About Apple.
Yeah. I mean, not about Apple specifically, about antitrust legislation generally.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the Dollar Tree thing, because I feel like you have probably some things to say about this. So the big news was that Dollar Tree has increased their maximum price from $5 to $7. And this is obviously because they're catering to more high-end, higher-income people. It has nothing to do with inflation, of course.
I love that that's the storyline, because it could not be further from the truth. Like, that's like, these stores are not catering to a higher... I mean, it is funny, though, because even like all of these dollar-type companies, they always want to say that. Like, that's the... Like, we're going to bring in like this different type of merchandise to cater to this higher-end person. But that's never really what it is. You know, I mean, it's just like the prices are increasing because of inflation, and the dollar's like losing value, all of that stuff, all the stuff we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's really going on here. It's wild. And something that I was actually thinking about today is, like, I remember as a kid, like, going to the dollar store or whatever, and even as like a young child, thinking, like, how is the store going to make it when... Because even as a kid, I knew like inflation was a thing. Like, I didn't know exactly what you call it, but I mean,
you knew that prices increased over time.
Yeah, prices increase over time. It's like, what's the store going to do in 10, 20 years when it has to, like, things eventually have to cost more than a dollar here, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we're kind of living through that, where like the dollar store just isn't the dollar store anymore, you know?
Yeah. It used to be the five and dime. Now it's just going to be the 5 and 10, but it's going to be dollars.
Dollars, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they have those too. So
yeah,
you know. I forget the name of it. The
5 and 10 store.
No. But there's you've got one in the little strip mall up there. I cannot remember the name of it though. But everything's like $5. Like, it's like a $5 store.
Well, it used to be the dollar store though.
Yeah, but it's a different company though. I can't think of the name of it though.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I can't.
I haven't shopped there. I'm too high end.
You're too high end. They got some pretty cool stuff in there for $5.
I shop at the Dollar General on the corner here.
Yeah.
Dollar
Generals are different though. Like, they're more of they call it Dollar General because everything's generally like that used to be the thing. It's generally a dollar. It's never been like the dollar store.
Yeah.
So that's never been their shtick.
Okay, well, it's mostly the $3 general.
Yeah, right.
At this point.
Yeah.
But it is funny to me that they're trying to say that, like, the idea that they're trying to cater to a higher-end customer by raising their prices, their maximum price from $5 to $7.
Yeah.
It's just insane. Like, that you're going to draw in those high-end customers because your best perfume is now $7 instead of $5,
right,
when the high-end customers that they're talking about are paying $30, $50 for perfumes.
Yeah, you're right, about $30 to $50. Exactly, yeah. That's not... you didn't just really make the margin.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of unreal. And some of the reporting that I heard, they were saying, well, you know, there's a significant percentage of people that are making up to $125,000 a year, and they're shopping at the dollar store. And the answer is, of course, well, like, maybe $125,000 a year isn't that much money anymore.
Well, it's not. And depending on where you live, it's really not.
Yeah.
Like, where we live, that's still pretty good, but we're not like the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's areas where if you're making that, you're probably like, you're doing all right, but you're getting by. You're not like.
We're in this like semi-rural part of a poor state. Like, there are cities in this state, like Birmingham or Huntsville.
Oh, Huntsville, for sure.
Huntsville, like, that's a nothing income.
Yeah, you're barely getting by.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just thought it was funny. I guess if you don't have more to say about it, then we can move on.
No, we move to the next thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's all good.
So, there's the Apple antitrust legislation, lawsuit, whatever. That's coming around. So this was the kind of the crux of my argument with the guy at work is that my position is that there has never been an application of antitrust law that benefited consumers in the history of this country. Yeah. That the real application of antitrust legislation in this country is to benefit either the government or the competition of whoever they're going after.
Yeah.
And so one of my questions, though, in this particular case is, why are they going after Apple?
Yeah.
Now, I have an answer. What do you think?
I mean, like I say, I know that Apple traditionally has been pretty good about not giving government access to their like back end stuff and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess, but
What I think it's about.
Is that what you think too?
Yeah, that's what I think it's about. It's like, look, you either play ball with us or this is what we can do to you.
Yeah. Which is, by the way, is the reason I love Apple products. Like I say, I mean, I do. I love an iPhone, man.
Well, one of the things that I saw in there was that they were. One of the big issues is that Apple doesn't allow in the Apple Store the App Store. The Apple App Store on your iDevice. Yeah. Some competitive products to things that they do.
Yeah.
And so that's a problem. They should, allow all these products. Like, people have worked hard on these apps, and they should be available. And it's like, my first thought was like, well, what about the actual Apple stores? Do they need to be able to? They have to sell Galaxies. They can't exclusively sell Apple products at the Apple store.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the limitations that you understand when you buy Apple products.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, the part of the reason I'm such a big Apple fan is their stuff just works better.
Yeah. They're really careful about what they allow in their store in a lot of ways, not just like limiting competitive products.
Yeah. Because, like I say, I mean, I wear an Apple Watch now, and that thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does everything like I would want it to do. And I've talked to plenty of people that use the Android products, and they're like, it's just never does what I, it's just never right.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, it's just not as good.
Well, one of the decent arguments that I heard was that, you know, there are people that have worked hard and put a lot of resources into creating apps that Apple just kind of parodied and made available for free on all of their products.
Oh, yeah.
And so what about this person? Like, that's an unfair business practice. They're driving this person out of business that, you know, spent a lot of time and worked hard on this product. And now Apple has created a similar product that they just give away for free.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it sucks for that guy. Yeah. But you know what? All of us that buy Apple products, it's all the better for us.
Yeah.
That's probably part of the reason why we buy Apple products.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to me that they're trying to punish a business for doing good business.
Yeah. For doing a good job. Yeah.
You know, for drawing enough customers in, consumers in that are willing to sacrifice some things that they limit because they do limit
things. Like, there are things that you just can't get with an iPhone that you can with an Android. Mm-hmm. And the Android people are all, like, they're not afraid to rub it in your face about that.
Yeah.
And that's fine to me because, like I say, I don't need those things. Apple will decide when I need that.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the things that the guy, this is when I got real passionate and loud in the office about this stuff because he's just wrong and I had to try to correct him.
Yeah.
Is this myth that Rockefeller with Standard Oil.
Okay.
All right. So Rockefeller was Standard Oil way back when.
I'm familiar.
And this is one of those myths of the robber barons, quote unquote.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So that Standard Oil, they dropped the price of all of their products to push out competitors.
Yep.
Now
they did attempt to do that.
No, they didn't.
Well, they attempted to.
No, they didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's no evidence that any business has ever dropped the price of their products purely to push out competition.
Yeah.
Now, the story is that Standard Oil dropped the price of their products to where they were taking a loss so that they could get rid of competition and then raise their prices to monopolistic prices.
Yeah, but my understanding of the history there is that they did that, but every time they went to go raise the prices, or they would drop it to try to eliminate the competition, but then when the competition was gone and they went to raise the prices, immediately another competitor would move in and undercut them again.
Yeah.
And that they were just never able to get to be able to do it. Because
that's a better story.
I mean, that's my understanding of the history. Now, I may not be correct on that.
No, you're not. But
okay.
But that's a better story. Yeah. The general myth is that they dropped their prices to the point where they were taking a loss because they had a big cash.
Because they had the supply to do it, the capital to do it.
Right. And and they pushed out all their competition and they raised their prices back up to screw the consumer.
Yeah.
Not true. There's no evidence that any business has ever done this.
Okay.
They had lower prices.
Yeah.
Than their competitors.
Because they just were.
Because they were a better run business.
Through efficiency.
Efficiency, through managerial tactics, through so forth. They actually were able to offer their product at a lower price.
Yeah.
There were a whole bunch of managerial innovations that are still used today in Standard Oil. They actually offered a quality product at a lower price, and they didn't throw things away. They developed kerosene. They developed petroleum jelly. They essentially found uses for the byproducts of the oil production.
Yeah.
And sold that too.
Yeah.
They were just a better company than all their competitors. And the antitrust legislation was lobbied for by their competitors because their competitors couldn't bring their prices down to this level of Standard Oil.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the end, though, when they broke up Standard Oil, prices went up everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It didn't benefit the consumer, which is the stated goal of antitrust legislation.
Yeah.
Is to
drive out monopolies.
Yeah,
to
increase competition, drive out non-competitive environments, drive out monopolies so that the consumer can benefit. But that's never happened.
Yeah.
In every case that antitrust legislation has ever been used, it's been used at the expense of the consumer.
Yeah.
And that was Standard Oil was another example of that. And even if you take the idea at its face, okay, so oil production particularly is a high capital investment.
You got to really supply it at the front end to make the money on the back end.
Right. How long do you think that Standard Oil would have had to take a loss on every sale they made to drive out their competitors who had already sunk a lot of money into it?
Yeah, right.
in order to develop their business in the first place.
Yeah.
Decades, maybe? Yeah. So even at the low end, I would say 8 to 10 years. 8 to 10 years of taking a loss on every sale they make.
Yeah.
No business can survive that. And no board of directors would have
approved of that. Right. Especially on the idea, well, once we get rid of these guys, we'll make the real money then. Like,
right. And but like you said, so what happens when they drive out their competitors? Yeah. Now, if they've been taking a loss all this time, they can't buy up the resources of those competitors. They can't buy up the production facilities and so forth because they've been taking a loss all this. They don't have the capital.
Yeah, they won't have the capital. Yeah.
So what happens when they bring their prices back up? Even if they succeed in driving out their competitors, what happens when they bring their prices back up?
Immediately somebody else is jumping in.
Absolutely. Somebody's buying the production facilities for somebody that got driven out of business at 60 cents on the dollar and immediately competing with them again.
Yeah.
There were hundreds of other companies competing with them when the antitrust legislation was pushed through.
Yeah.
It's just the whole thing's a lie.
Yeah.
What Standard Oil did was that they reduced the price of oil across the board because of their good business practices.
Yeah.
Because of their efficiency and their management. Same thing with U.S. Steel, Carnegie.
Yeah.
I can't remember the numbers exactly, but it was something like after the like while they were pushing their business forward, and they developed a whole bunch of extra efficiencies in the production of steel and so forth. That I don't remember. It was like a decade into U.S. Steel or something like that. That steel was the price of steel had been reduced to something like 6 cents on the dollar of what it had been when they started.
Wow.
And it's not because they were taking a loss. It's just because they were running their business better.
Because they were good at it.
And they enabled the real modernization of America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like both of these guys, Carnegie and Rockefeller.
You take away the oil and the steel, we have a hard time going through the industrial.
Energy and steel, like their efficiencies, their ability to push prices down and increase both the quality and the quantity of the products that they were producing is what enabled the modernization and the real capital build in this country.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And they're demonized for it. Yeah. So, but those guys were doing this through entrepreneurial skill.
Yeah.
Through innovation and entrepreneurial skill. Yeah. The guys that were lobbying for antitrust legislation to break up their competitors, those guys were doing it in a different way.
Yeah.
They were trying to use government to improve their competition, their competitive advantage. They were using government for their competitive advantage instead of appealing to the consumers. And it's at the expense of the consumers that all this stuff has ever been done.
Yeah. And we're going through another revolution now. Like, we're in like the technology revolution here. Mm-hmm. And information is the key to that. Like, all of the metadata and all of the stuff. Like, that's, like, for whatever reason, like, that's the thing right now, like, is trying to get access to that. And the government's the biggest one that wants it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this deal with Apple, I think it boils down to just that, you know, the Apple's not wanting to play ball with the government. And the government's like, well, we have,
we have threats.
Yeah, yeah, we have ways to do this. We have six ways from Sunday to take you down, like...
So, make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I think's going on here. I guess time will tell as this plays out.
Yeah, it's that very mafia aspect of government. I love the Dave Smith thing that, you know, government is the mafia masquerading as a human rights organization.
Yes,
this is a perfect example right here. Yeah. They're saying, well, you know, we want to improve the competition to better the consumer's position, I guess.
Yeah.
But the truth is that prices will probably go up. Yeah.
The consumer is winning right now.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I mean,
it's the consumer that's the reason that Apple has done so well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so it's one of those situations where they're like, well, you know, it sure would be a shame if we, you know, if we would have to break up your company into a bunch of smaller parts.
Yeah.
It sure would be a shame. You know, of course, you could just give us the information that you want, that
exactly.
we want.
Exactly.
And that's how I see this.
Yeah. That's what I see too. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like I said, I'm a big fan of Apple products. I hope the government doesn't step in and screw it up.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is that it's not like they're subsidizing Apple. And the truth is that no business that's ever getting government subsidies is ever held for antitrust legislation because they're already on board.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. They're not hauling Elon Musk in for any of this.
Yeah. The only monopoly that persists without government support is a monopoly that exists because the product that's offered and the price that's offered is better than anybody else can do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, in a true free market, like the market will weed out the monopolies.
Yeah.
Like there just won't be monopolies.
Unless they actually offer the best product at the best price.
Well, in which case, who's complaining?
Exactly. The government.
Exactly.
Well, they're competitors. That's who's complaining.
Well, the competitors.
And the competitors are using the government to get their way.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what antitrust legislation is mostly used for.
Yeah. No, I agree. So...
all right. If anybody's got some alternative examples, send them to me.
Yeah.
I don't think you can produce it, but we'll see. I'll research it. Yeah. If you send it to me, I'll research it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why you're wrong on the next podcast.
I'm gonna look in the Standard Oil myself because I thought I knew the history of there.
Yeah, I actually like my friend at the office. I was like, you need to read more about this.
Yeah, I mean, I find all that stuff fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
yeah, all of the antitrust legislation that has been used has actually resulted in a reduction in competition in the industry.
Yeah.
Every single example in the history of the U.S., it has always ended up in a reduction in competition, a lowering of quality of product, and an increase in price.
Yeah.
It has never benefited the consumer.
Yeah. There you go. That's your government for you.
Yep. Always on your side.
That's right.
As long as you've got a lot of money to give to them.
Yep.
And that's why they shouldn't have the power in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
It's not that you got to get money out of politics. You got to get politics out of money.
Yeah. No, that's 100%. That's what it is. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and wrap up. That wasn't bad for no notes at all, really.
Just a list of things to talk about.
Yeah. We're good. As far as I know, we should be back next week as normal.
As far as I know, I'm good.
And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook. You can subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, like and share, comment, subscribe. You can always contact me at michael@thelibertymike.com. You know, you can leave reviews and that's appreciated too. And all those other things. And if we're consistent enough for long enough, then our audience will build back up and then we'll miss an episode and we'll lose a third of our audience. Like it happens every time. Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand how this works exactly. You guys are really fickle out there, man. One episode, miss one episode, lose a third of the audience. It's incredible.
Yeah. They'll be back.
It takes so long though.
Yeah.
It's like we're replaced so quickly.
Yeah. That's easy to do, man.
I don't understand why. We're obviously better than everybody else.
Clearly, but...
But we will be back next week when we finally get this right. And in the meantime, try to stay free.
Life short, live free.
Ciao.
Later.